I should have known better. He was going to sing it anyway, and my plea only made him relish doing so all the more. He laughed as he turned and took his bearings on the front door, heaved his big shoulders back as he took a deep breath, and began to belt out, "Good night, Irene," at the top of his lungs as he shambled up to the darkened house. This was old hat to me and his neighbors, but next door, Mrs. Keene felt honor-bound to turn on her porch light to register annoyance. O'Connor grinned and went on in, waving as he closed the door. The morning after our night at Banyan's, somebody left a package on O'Connor's front porch. Mrs. Keene was out watering her lawn, and later she said she saw him come padding out in his bare feet and bathrobe to pick up the paper. He was a little hungover, I guess, because she said that he didn't see the package until the return trip. She was a little embarrassed to see him in his robe, so she didn't call out a good morning or anything. But she's a nosy bird, and she was curious about the package. Nobody knows exactly what happened after that, except that the explosion knocked Mrs. Keene on her keister and sent little pieces of O'Connor just about everywhere they could go. I was at home, having a lazy morning, hanging around in an old pair of PJs and reading the paper with the supervision of my big gray tomcat, Wild Bill Cody, when the phone rang. It was Lydia Ames, an old pal of mine over at the newspaper where I used to work, the Las Piernas News Express. "Irene, does O'Connor live on Randall Avenue?" "Who wants to know?" I asked, wary of her tone. "Shit, Irene!" Now, Lydia has only cussed one other time in her life that I know of, and that was when Alicia Penderson showed up at our high school prom in a gown identical to Lydia's. A strapless affair, only on Alicia it seemed to be working harder to defy gravity. So, all of a sudden, here's Lydia on a Sunday morning, talking blue and sounding like she was about to cry. I told her O'Connor's address. She didn't say anything for about 4 hours, or so it seemed, but I guess it was really only about half a minute. "Lydia, what the hell is going on?" "Shit, Irene." Now she was crying. "Irene, I think you better get over to O'Connor's place. We just got a report that there's been some kind of explosion. Baker's on his way to cover it." The whole time I was getting dressed and driving over to O'Connor's, I kept telling myself that Lydia was pretty hysterical and that I didn't really know that anything had happened to O'Connor. Maybe just his house. Maybe not O'Connor, but someone else. Maybe some other house. That all started to change when I saw the rising smoke from half a mile away. A slow, cold numbing started in my throat and eventually froze me in place on the sidewalk across the street from his house. Clusters of firemen formed tense huddles with cops. The place was surrounded by fire trucks, police cars, the bomb squad van, the coroner's ambulance. The house was smashed, as if it were nothing more than an egg. A yolk of mud and debris was spilling out of its broken shell. I wanted to find O'Connor. I felt certain that if they would just let me look, just let someone who had cared about him look, I'd find him. I sometimes hear about people knowing right away that someone they loved has died, that they feel the dead person's spirit leave or something. O'Connor stuck around. I heard someone yell, "Kelly," and turned to see a tall black man walking toward me. It was Mark Baker, the reporter sent out by the Express. "Oh, God, Irene, I'm so sorry," he said in a shaky voice. I wasn't ready for sympathy and looked away. He understood and stopped talking, just put one of his burly arms around my shoulders and guided me away from the crowd. Mark took me over to where Frank Harriman was trying to get some sense out of Mrs. Keene, then left to talk to one of the guys from the bomb squad. Frank and I had met when he was a rookie cop in Bakersfield, and I was on my first crime beat as a